Hi, this is Tracy Wilson Rossman, Chief Cat Herder at Chariot Solutions and Tech Girls on the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm Andy Cleff, and I'm joined with my fellow board member, Colleen Johnson.
Hello, everybody.
And our board member emeritus, Ryan Larkhart.
Well, hello, hello. It's been a while.
We're joined in this episode by guest Tracy Wilson Rossman, and our theme for the show is how life's scary moments become great learning experiences. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thank you for having me.
That's our pleasure. For those listeners who aren't familiar with you, give us a little bit of background.
Sure. Well, for the last 15 years, I've been working at a company called Chariot Solutions. I'm one of the founding members. I'm their chief marketing officer. I handle sales, marketing, some strategy, and lots of other little things that you do in a small to medium-sized company, right? Chariot is a custom software and mobile application development company. And for the last 8 years, I've been the founder of Tech Girls, and that's with a Z.org. Tech Girls is a nonprofit whose mission is to help middle school girls understand the power of technology for their future careers.
That's a great mission, starting at that age.
It is a great mission. I think we're doing a great job. We just celebrated our 10,000th girl who has been through one of our workshops that we call tech shops. And we're trying to have them understand that technology is not just about coding, that there's many ways for them to participate. Certainly, they could become Scrum Masters at some point. I don't think we teach Agile yet, but it certainly should be something on our list of things to do.
We'll include links to help our listeners connect with you on that. So what connected us was a Philly Mag article from earlier this year, February. The headline was Five Philly Business Execs Share Their Biggest Career Failures. And that really syncs up greatly with something that we as a group are fascinated with. And I'll share a quote that really caught my attention and then ask you to give us the backstory behind this. The quote was, "It's important for us to understand failure is a part of learning." And why this was important for me, you as the speaker, to make myself an example, because there are very few people who are overnight successes. There's a journey they took. Tell us more about that journey.
What the story is about is when my husband and I had purchased what was then the mother company of a, it was franchised as well, but it was a child transportation company called KangaCab. This is oh so long ago. I was 7 months pregnant with our second child, decided to purchase this business. There are times where I just wonder what were we thinking at that point, but it really was something that I was ready to do to change what I was doing and to really try something different. So it was a rocky 3.5 years of owning this business. You know, as I wrote in the article, my husband, who kept his job, he is a partner at a tax firm in the city. Thank goodness he kept his job. I ran the company along with his help, but it was mostly fell on me and I was not prepared at all. So trial by fire. And I really believe that I wouldn't be where I am today with all of those mistakes that we made. And if I didn't learn from those mistakes and wasn't able to apply those lessons, I don't think that I would have been prepared to be part of a startup or, you know, a startup company. Wouldn't have been thinking about these lessons as we form Tech Girls, which even though it's a nonprofit, we really try and run as a startup. So failing was the greatest learning moment of my life. It didn't seem like that at the time. So, you know, I'm a type A person, always, you know, straight A, except for a couple B's every now and then, but you know, so the failure was difficult at the time, but as with so many things in life, as you look back, you realize that there's so much to learn from those experiences. and the edge gets taken off a little bit, right?
Yeah. I like the fact that when you talk about your background, you said straight A student, except for a couple of B's. We just met this evening, but I'm willing to garner a bet that you remember the B's way more than you remember the A's.
Oh yeah. You know, perfection. Being perfect is certainly part of the type A personality. Recent example, my younger son and I were traveling through a mistake. We left his coat and it was my fault. So even though it wasn't, it just was a bunch of circumstances, but you still feel that, wow, I'm not, you know, this imperfection is really bugging me. So it's, it's part of my charm.
So I'm kind of curious with the original startup, when I'm trying to figure out at what point when you realized it wasn't working well, right? And it was starting down that failure path. What were the tells? And I guess, how did that affect you as a type A person that's pretty much had a track record of success? Like, did it challenge your ego? Did it challenge who you thought you were?
Oh, it definitely challenged my ego. You know, it's been a while, so I can't remember the exact moment where I knew it was time to move on. Probably when I looked at the bank reconciliations. But, you know, when we were able to sell the business, I'm not proud to say that it, you know, we lost money, but, you know, we were able to get out without, you know, totally losing our shirts. And, you know, once we were out of there, out of it, I had this ongoing discussion with myself about what success was. I never really sat and talked to anyone around about that at the time. And I think definitely one of the things that I've learned is by surrounding yourself, one of my friends has talked about having a personal board. I didn't have a personal board.
It's come up in other shows.
Very, very, very bad mistake on my part. So that when I was having these issues, of figuring out what success was and really questioning what had happened, I didn't have a place to go. So it was an internal dialogue. And I was really able to work. In fact, I thought about writing a book for a while, but that's another story. But, you know, I think that there should be some sort of book defining what success means to different people. And what I was able to come out of it, and when I got to the other side, it was probably about a year, honestly, of really thinking through this. Even though things did not go well, and they did not, you know, at the end where people would say, oh, you were such a success because you were able to sell the business for this amount of money, or you were able to franchise it and open all these different things. What I was really able to come out of the other side with was my husband and I had done something that most people haven't done, which is run a business for 3 years and keep it running and employ a certain amount of people. Was it 100%, you know, a shining star success? No, it wasn't. But there were some things that came out of it. Now, some people who are listening may think that's making, you know, lemonade out of lemons, but especially as we're talking about failure, right? But I think that there's something that you need to pull out of any, you know, any experience that you've had.
So many of the conferences that are held across the planet on a regular basis focus on success, right? And the leaders and the presenters and the attendees, you know, what made them the best, you know, and the hope, and it's a fallacy, is that if we just follow that, it'll work for us too. But I, like you said, Tracy, reflecting back on your experience on KangaCab and understanding how the failures is part of learning and then sharing that moving forward, I think that's where the gold is. we as a group had talked about doing a fail con. No successes allowed. And just tell us about your dumpster fires, where you failed, and what you learned to help the rest of us when we're ready to throw in the towel to keep going.
So there's two points, and I think this is also why I've been able to put things in perspective. One, I think working within the software industry and seeing how software is crafted, I'm not going to call them mistakes, but there's failures that happen all the time. Code doesn't work. It breaks. You put things in production. There's bugs. That's expected. The bugs get fixed. There's a forgiveness, except when it's mission critical system. There's a forgiveness in the software industry and the allowance for iterations to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that has really helped my way of thinking. Also, if we take a look at the lean startup methodology, which follows a lot of agile methodology, the idea that you're iterating, you're doing it in small bits that allows you to see what's not working, which I'm not calling a failure, but what's not working so that you can adjust quickly, I think is really helpful as well. And it's helped me put things that were earlier in my career in perspective. The other big piece is as women, I think that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be perfect. And if there's tons of studies that show like we don't speak up in a room unless we know the answer and all of these things. So I believe that it's important for me to be out there to talk about failure, to show that it's okay to do these experiments and not be perfect and be an example out there. So, you know, that's another piece, yes, especially for the girls that we're working with.
And when you mm-hmm. mentioned that work that you're doing with tech girls, you know, you've said reflecting back on your experiences with Kinga Cab and all of those moments where in the moment it feels like a failure, but once we're past it and through it, it's easy to look back and see what we've learned. What advice do you offer, not just to the girls through Tech Girls, but to women and anyone on how to stay present and focus, you know, to get through that moment, right? Because it does feel like a failure when it's happening.
You know, I think it's depending on the size of what you're going through. So certainly from a Kinga Cab standpoint, it was big. You know, my livelihood was there. The time and money that we had invested, my husband and I, certainly made it, you know, more gut wrenching and clenching. So one thing that I do talk to people about is risk. You know, it's not about being risk tolerant. It's just how much are you willing to lose, and understanding how to, you know, if you're going to fail, or if it is something where you think it could wind up failing, you know, how big is that failure that you're willing to take?
Yeah.
I think sometimes we don't start something because we're afraid at the beginning that the worst will happen and we're going to fail. But when we start thinking about what is the biggest thing that can happen, what's the worst that can happen in terms of what can fail, and then that gets put in perspective, you have a better idea. I was talking to my board member, and he's been asking me to do this project, and I haven't had a chance yet to start it. And we were talking about, and there's reasons why I haven't started it, but I said, you know, part of it is that it makes me uncomfortable to start it, but I said, how am I supposed to fail at it if I haven't even started it?
Yeah. You have to go out and fail. There's so many wonderful stories of people that just take that first step.
Right.
And I think we have to encourage the younger generation, the people that are type A's and are afraid of getting the B, or heaven forfend, they get the C. Mm-hmm. But there's no way to get better. You can't go up much up if you're at an A. So if you're at a B, get to an A. If you're at a C, get to a B and get better no matter where you are. So you've talked about this history. Bring us a little closer to the present. Have you got an example? I'm going to put you on the spot. Something in the last couple of weeks.
The last couple of
that,
weeks.
That maybe because your experience with failure isn't that big anymore, but for someone new at it might be, oh my God, how did you survive that?
Yeah, I can't think of how about a mistake that I made? I wouldn't call a total fail, but, and this goes back to me not, you know, not wanting to be imperfect. We had been, I just came back from South by Southwest, and we had a big contingent that came from Philadelphia. I was helping to work on the programming for the space, the activation space that the Philadelphia group was putting together. And I had invited a friend of mine who was coming later at the conference to come earlier. So we were at the first part of the conference, which was Sunday, Monday. I'm even getting this confused now. And he was coming on Wednesday. But I said, come earlier, you'll be part of our, you know, be part of the house. And I got the dates wrong. When I realized it, I was mortified. It took me like a half a day to have enough guts to let him know that I had made the mistake. That was really hard for me. I've learned how to rip, I call it, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off. So I ripped the Band-Aid off and I said, hey, friend, I've made this mistake. I hope, you know, I hope you haven't changed your plans yet. If you did, we'll figure that piece out, but I'm really sorry. And it's, you know, it's difficult for me to tell you this, but, you know, it's just something that has gone wrong. I know that doesn't sound like a big failure, but for me, who's, you know, all about schedules and knowing, you know, event planning, things like that, that was, you know, right now, that was a big mistake that I made.
There's two things that you had said earlier that resonate with me. And it's really, you talked about defining what success means to other people and failure in software. And it's something that in my world, I get asked often as a consultant working with large companies around building resilient systems and software and pipelines and things of that nature. What are metrics that we should look for as signs of success and, you know, green lights, good indicators. And, you know, also pulling down from lean methods, I love the idea of the Andon cord being a measure of success, which basically means when there's a failure, that's a good sign. That literally means the test harnesses, the inspection points that we're building into the system are working. If everything passes, that means your tests aren't rigid enough. So taking kind of the narrative of this show and you know, really just wrapping it around that concept of using every time you have a bug or every time you have a build that doesn't go out well, I apply the concepts that you're talking about here into that software. That bug should then turn into a test to make sure right. that we don't allow for that in the future. I'm curious, you know, obviously being local in Philly with Chariot and then the Tech Girls and even the E2E conference that you guys graciously put on every year, I'm curious if you're seeing that kind of come up in your day-to-day with some of the work that you're building out using failure as a success metric.
You know, I don't think that that I think of it in that way. I think what I'm looking at more often is, although maybe I should start thinking about it that way, it's more about points. Like, are we hitting certain dates, keeping things in line? So I'm dealing it more from like an event management standpoint, things that we're trying to figure out the number of speakers, like just say if we have an event that will be passed by the time this show airs called IoT Fusion. There's certain things that we have to meet when the speakers are up on the website. If we're having trouble, it's a new event. So if I can't get the speakers, that says something to me. We're not getting the certain number of attendees by a certain point. That says something to me about the event. So there's markers that I understand that we should be looking at, which give me some guidance along the way. So I'm looking, so in a way, I guess I am looking for those points of failure, but I'm not calling it that exactly when you're doing it that way.
Seems like the same measures, just a different lens.
Exactly. And I think it's important, you know, one of the things that just happened with Tech Girls. So we had our 10,000th girl celebration and we're a small team. You know, I'm sort of like swooping in. We have a 4-person team plus a couple of, you know, part-timers, consultants, and we're doing a lot with very little. So we have to be coordinated and we're there's a lot of things going on in our regular day-to-day life. And this 10,000th girl celebration was something that we really had to plan. And it was really the first time that we put together a set of like action items that we needed to do for the event, as well as for the marketing of the event. So we would hit those points and we would say, okay, this is what needs to get done by this point, assigning everybody's role. So at the end of the celebration, we looked back and we have to do a postmortem. We haven't had time to do the postmortem, but we looked back and we said, okay, we did not get everything done. Like we overscheduled ourselves on certain things. Is that a failure? No, that's actually a learning experience for us. There were certain things that we wanted to get done. We understand why they didn't get done. Some things we had a fish or cup bait because it was too overwhelming and we said, you know, cut it. Is that a failure? I think that's just being realistic. I think if we're not going back and doing the postmortem, that's going to be bad. If we're not learning from why some of those things didn't happen, then we're going to repeat those. Then it becomes a failure next time because those are things that we're going to repeat. And the funny thing is we're in our next phase. So our next plateau is 20,000 girls by 2020. And I don't have we don't have a plan put together. It's been a week and a half. And I said to my national outreach director, we need to put this together. Like we're going to wind up wasting time and spinning our wheels because we don't have a direction. So that's a failure. Like, so I think understanding where you can fail is, or where you fall down or however you want to express it is important to your point, Ryan, of just understanding where those points can be and being able to recognize it and also stop yourself.
Yeah. I like that you're talking about the postmortems right. That you do on these projects so that you've got an opportunity for that review and reflection on how things are going and yeah. And what can you learn. And that's very similar for us as Agile coaches to a retrospective that we do on a regular basis with the team. A lot of our retrospectives, we really try to focus in on action items or things that we want to change going mm-hmm. forward. Is that something that you pull into those postmortems?
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially for events or things that are going to be happening on a continuing basis, whether it's yearly or monthly, so that you can, you know, use those action items or those behaviors that worked to continue. The other thing that I think it allows is the voice of other people on the team to actually give their ideas. I think sometimes, you know, if you're a manager, you could just continue on without getting everybody's input. And I think maybe it's, I'll just call it experience versus age, but being able to hear the people that I work with, the people who work for me, hear what they have to say, let them contribute. You know, some of the best ideas or the recognitions of things that didn't go well are coming from other people. I still don't know everything.
Yeah, none of us do. What is this, some of the things that you have found useful in your travels for creating that atmosphere where people choose to speak up and voice rather than remain silent? You know, as coaches, we call it psychological safety. What are you finding that works either in Chariot Solutions or with Tech Girls? What are you exploring? What are you finding success in?
You know, I don't think that there's anything formal. I wish that there was, that I was maybe a little bit more involved as a manager to do that. You know, I think smaller group settings makes it easier. To some extent, I don't want people to be silent. I think I'm hoping that the atmosphere that I'm creating is an air of respect that you're going to be heard. I'm working really, really hard on myself not to react right away. If there's an idea that I don't think will work, it's a lot easier to do it over email because I can write something and then throw it out and rewrite it. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to ask questions about their idea if I don't agree with it, because maybe there's something that I'm missing.
Good exploration, staying open-minded. So we talked a lot earlier about learning from our failures. and something that I explore, and I'm curious if you do, celebrating failures that produce learnings.
Trying to think.
So bring it into code. So Ryan, or Ryan and Kyle, bring it into code, right? So you've done some episodes on mob programming and TDD, and you know, you build the test first and it fails. You're learning. And suddenly it's green. How do we amplify that?
I think there's layers to that question, right? Like those micro failures, as you think of them as, you know, unit test passing or failing, those are a lot easier to emotionally accept and to, you know, celebrate, you know, at the same scale as the failure itself. But I think when you step into a larger scale failure, when you have, you know, your personal finances tied into it, or you have your emotions wrapped into it, I think the level of personal impact that you face from the failure is in some way literally attached to how long it takes you to actually celebrate from the failure itself.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that there's times where you can celebrate a failure. I think if there's an event that you're running, like if, you know, like if ETE, the conference that we run at Chariot, failed.
Great conference.
Thank you. We took a little hiatus this year because we needed to rethink some things, but it's coming back soon.
Better.
And we're talking about it, but if that failed, that would be, there's nothing to celebrate there. You know, there wouldn't be celebration because there'd be learning, but we wouldn't be happy about it. So I think that the distinction, Ryan, is maybe there's some failures that are good, you know, because you're looking for, you know, the crack in the foundation. Like it's important to find that, right? And there's some failures that just aren't good. That doesn't mean that we can't discuss them. It doesn't mean that we can't learn from them post, but it doesn't mean that we can be happy about them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I actually love that. It makes perfect sense. I think Andy knows this because one night I posted it on Twitter. I might have had more than Andy's one glass of wine, and I submitted a talk to a conference, and the title of the talk is "Why I Suck: A Story of Failure." And as I'm writing it, Andy laughs because he knows me. While I'm actually, it got accepted, and I have to now stand in front of a very large room of people and go through this. And I talked through three different life events that really, you know, had a profound impact on who I am today and how I approach things. And, you know, one of those stories is actually the story of my divorce.
Yeah.
And to your point, I'm not celebrating a divorce, but there is a magnificent learning experience that I went through. And it you know, it's not, I don't look forward to this, but you know, it's one of those things where you do a lot of personal reflection on things like that, those major life events that you draw down from. And how does it change your perspective? How does it change your being? And I think we often talk about celebrating from failure, and I think learning from failure and celebrating from failure are not always synonymous. And you really, I never thought about it that way until you literally just said it right here, Tracy.
You know, it's interesting. I'm at a family crossroads right now. Most likely my older son is going to be moving cross country to try his luck at, you know, his lifelong passion and career. And, you know, as a mom, I'm like, I really don't want you to move cross country. But as a mom, I also said to him, you need to go do this. If this is something that you need to do, and you're doing it and understanding the risk and sort of trying to mitigate some of the risk, like, hey, you have enough money so that if you can't find a job, you won't be, you know, living on the streets. I'm okay with this. Because I don't want him living, you know, when he's 35 and going, I could have done this, but I didn't try it. So, and we've talked about, you know, you can come home. It's okay. And somebody had given him advice, and I'm glad that it wasn't me. It's somebody in his industry said, you set a date to go out and you set a date to come home. And if nothing's happened in between, it's time for you to come home. So, you know, I thought that was really interesting of just like, okay, you're allowing yourself you're giving yourself permission to fail. You're not going in there to fail, but you really have to have, you know, as you had said, Ryan, the sort of those points where you can say, okay, this is a failure. This isn't working. This is working. I'm moving forward. I'm not moving forward. And then you have an idea of when that point is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel that for him personally, it's better for him to try.
I like what you're saying about having that date to say, by this date, I'm going to reevaluate and go home. And I think, yeah. You know, we see this a lot with success metrics from a product perspective or from a, you know, a launch perspective, whatever we're trying to do to measure our success. It's really easy to say, you know, we need to hit 1,000 new signups, right? That's our success metric, but we fail to give ourselves that date to do, you know, to hold ourselves accountable to that success or failure metric. And so I think that's an important benchmark, like you're saying, to keep at the forefront. What other tools can you use to try to manage and measure some of that risk up front for the types of work that you do with Chariot?
So I'm on the sales and marketing side, not on the development side. So, you know, sometimes, I mean, we have quarterly goals, something that we put in place, it might be like 4 years ago. I'm not one of these people from a sales standpoint that says you have to make X amount of money per month or bring in, you know, this much business per month. Really better to me to look at it from a quarter, especially from new business, because things fluctuate when you can sign a contract, things like that. But quarterly, I think, gives you a little bit better. So what we decided to do was we wanted a certain number of proposals put out there and a certain number of wins per quarter. Mm-hmm. And that allowed us to, you know, say to ourselves, this is what's going to happen. If we do this work, we're going to see if this allows us to create more sales and more opportunities because we're getting this many proposals in. We had a little bit of a test. And what we've seen as a way of benchmarking is the years where we were able to meet those quarterly goals on a consistent basis, we had really good years. And the one year that we didn't do it, it was not as good of a year.
So you set those goals, which is a common pattern that we all use and some time boxes. And that year that you didn't meet those goals, how did you diagnose the problem?
Well, so, you know, after the first two quarters, we did have the opportunity to go and say, okay, this isn't happening. We need to start really looking at what other things we can do. So really delving into what was happening from, you know, leads coming in and networking events that we were going to and all those things, you know, the blocking and tackling that you need to do. So I think that that's another piece of, as we're setting these goals or stopping points or benchmarks along the way, that if things aren't going the way that you think that they should be going, your prediction, you really need to stop and go, okay, we can reevaluate at this point. I'm not setting a goal for the entire year, because if we do the entire year, if I get down to November and I haven't made it, there's not much I can do for December. It's too late. So I think breaking it up into chunks, whatever you're doing, makes it easier for us to diagnose, to do the iterations that we're going to need to do.
Yeah, I second that.
But also to just go back and diagnose to see what we need to do to be better or change. Or if it's a total fail, let's get out of it. Like, let's really understand.
Yeah, I think that model works at many different scales. There's that expression, and inside every big problem, there's little problems trying to get out. And so when you break it down, as you said, Ryan, in the micro level of TDD mm-hmm. or the macro level of a quarterly business plan, mm-hmm. you have a plan, you can diagnose what's going on, break it into smaller goals, and quickly mm-hmm. respond to the reality that's emerging and learn from it. Awesome. We are nearing the end of our time. I want to give a chance to share some upcoming events, give some shout outs. What's happening in the glorious month of April for you, Tracy?
Wow, that was fast. Well, in May, I'm going to be in Chicago with the Women in Tech Summit. It's the first time that we'll be in Chicago. The Women in Tech Summit will be in 6 cities this year, and all of the proceeds go directly to Tech Girls. So if you're in Chicago, you're listening out there, look up womenintechsummit.net.
And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, Tracy? We'll include this in the show notes for our listeners.
Yeah, we definitely have a strong listener base out in Chicago. So hopefully get a few from there.
Well, if you're interested in the work that we're doing at Tech Girls and you want to understand how you can be part of the revolution of girls and women in tech, go to techgirls.org. Learn how you can teach one of our tech shops in your area. It's free because we subscribe to the open source model.
That's great work.
You can teach 15 girls at a time, 50 different lesson plans.
That is awesome.
Pretty cool. And if you need some, you know, custom software, mobile applications done, you can reach us at chariotsolutions.com.
Colleen, what do you got going on April, May?
Hopefully holding a brand new baby in my arms. I don't know yet if it's a product owner or a scrum master. So that will be my big announcement.
The video cast.
Yeah.
Should we do a Twitch, or is that a little too much for our listening audience? Oh, that's great.
The reveal party.
Congratulations. We'll definitely share some photos when the new life form emerges. Ryan, how about you, sir?
By the grace of God, I won't be holding a newborn. Now, April 18th in Atlanta for DevOps Days Atlanta, and that's where I'll be doing the Why I Suck talk. May 11th, Agile Day Atlanta, talking about the Enterprise DevOps Framework. May 21 through 24 out in Anaheim for the Palo Alto Ignite, talking about cybersecurity in the cloud. And then I'm super excited to do the Agile Dev West in Vegas in June. Doing a recap of the Agile Manifesto author talk that we published on this platform.
You think we'll get the last three authors?
I don't know.
Hey, if you guys are listening, we're waiting for you. We're here. Just call us up.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to host the call. Mm-hmm. We'll ship you some cold beers.
I'm at the point where I'm willing to fly out to them.
All right. We've upped the ante. Myself, nothing cooking in April. May, I'll be at Big Apple Scrum Day in New York and Mile High Agile. I've got two talks going on and then stuff later in the year.
Nice.
Well, thanks again, Tracy. Glad you could join us.
Thank you. This was a pleasure. Thank you.
To our listening audience, if this episode was not a complete failure, give us a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast platform of choice. If this is your first time tuning in, subscribe. You'll catch our next episode automatically. If you'd like to join the discussion and share your stories of complete disaster plus learning, join us at coalition.agileuprising.com. Finally, support from listeners like you help us cover our costs for hosting and production. See the show notes for details on how you can become a patron. Till next time, this is Andy Clef for the Agile Uprising podcast, signing out.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.